beats there from Otro Trago, or Another Drink, the Panamanian musician is Sesh. We are exploring the history and influences of the hugely popular music genre, reggaeton, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Spotify, it recently launched its podcast called Loud, The History of Reggaeton, hosted by reggaeton pioneer Evie Queen. Some trailer here.
It started the way most great movements start, en las calles, in the streets. They were Panamanians having fun, but they were also creating a new sound. And that sound would spread like wildfire.
Over the decades, did you listen to Daddy Yankee or Tego Calderon or Evie Queen? What about the beats, the lyrics, or identity of reggaeton that draws you to the genre? It's 800-642-1234. Catalina Gata Eccleston is a music historian analyzing the social paradigms of reggaeton. She is associate producer for Spotify's Loud podcast. Catalina, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Maria. I'm very excited to talk about all things reggaeton. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So the Loud podcast is getting a lot of traction. 3 years in the making, it really aimed to set the history straight on reggaeton. Do you think it's achieved that?
Absolutely. I feel like Loud is not only a personal and professional dream come true for me, but really has the capacity to expand the thinking of reggaeton and all things, academic, and really be that bridge for people to be able to analyze the music in a way they never have before.
We're going to talk more about one of its pioneers, Evie Queen, but she, as the host, she had described the genre as an inspirational tale of how a marginalized community created a genre of music with universal appeal. You know, that it is doing a lot. Do you think reggaeton has really created that universe?
Yes, it's part of its lineage. I say that reggaeton is a daughter of hip-hop, and that's exactly how, the inception of hip-hop has begun. And it's, that continuation has, that's just lineage. That's pretty much how this evolution continues from reggae to hip-hop to reggaeton. Absolutely.
There are some episodes of the podcast referencing places like New York and Puerto Rico, but the story, starting in Panama, and this is Panamanian artist Reynado recalling the moment he became an MC on Spotify's Loud podcast.
That's how it started, and I started doing that stuff. So a friend of mine told me, hey, why don't you do it in Spanish?
Oh, my God. And when he hypes the crowd in Spanish, the crowd loves it.
And I am playing reggae. And I'm telling the people to lift their hands. This is here.
You can feel that energy, Catalina. How does the story of reggaeton unfold in the series?
Well, there's a phrase that I say often, it's giving its flowers. And I feel like that's something that Loud accomplishes just so beautifully. In Panama, there's always this rhetoric of where did it start? Was it in Panama or Puerto Rico? Mm-hmm. And I feel like Loud gave the flowers to Panama because it not only laid its roots, but it was able to fully illustrate how it wasn't just reggae in Spanish that Panamanians were creating, but it was a music of resistance. It was a continuation of that legacy from Jamaica, and Panamanians were there and part of this innovation. They were innovators, being able to transform reggae to dancehall to reggaeton. Absolutely.
There's some history that Jamaican immigrants who worked on the Panama Canal, way back, Panama Canal being built in the early 1900s, that they had a role in reggaeton coming into form. Can you help us understand that history?
Yes. So the Panama Canal was constructed beginning in 1903. There were Afro-Antillean or Afro-West Indian, immigrants from Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad, and they came over, not only worked on the canal, but they brought their culture, their patois, their dialects, their food, their music, and that had a tremendous amount of influence on you know, the Panamanians who settled in the zone, right? There was this sort of dichotomy, because there were the native Black Panamanians were their descendant of, you know, slavery. And then here are now these Afro-Antillians. There was a sort of tension between the two that a lot of people haven't known before this podcast, because of respectability and because of, you know, the branding of larger Panamanian society. The questioning of what a Panamanian looks like, you know, began to occur during this time, you know, when there was this whole dictatorship happening, right, with Manuel Noriega. So much so to the point where there were laws created to sort of limit the amount of Afro-Antillean or Afro-Caribbeans immigrating to the country, because there was this sort of tension of, well, you know, we really don't want this to kind of stick, your culture, because it's messing up what we want the branding of the nationalist of the nationalist idea of Panama to look like. So there was a lot of social conflict amongst native Black Panamanians and Afro-Antillians. And even more than that, you know, there was the systematic oppression of police, right, with El Deni, that's illustrated in episode one of Loud. So, I mean, essentially, you know, we're able to pretty much break this down. That's a lot that I just said, right?
There's a lot of tension, a lot of history there, but we're with you. Yes. Carry on. Yeah.
There was a lot to break down there. I feel like we've done so in a way that was able to give people dignity and done in a way that was able to really break down how it really went down. Because I feel like it was important for people to really understand these different aspects of Black Panamanian experience here in, well, there in Panama. I say here because I'm Panamanian myself, so it's hard to distinguish myself. Sometimes I feel it's my history.
Yeah, understood. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Catalina Gata Eccleston, who is a music historian and entrepreneur and associate producer for Spotify's Loud podcast. You can join in. What are the influences of reggaeton and the genre that speaks to you? When did you first hear it? Join in at 800-642-1234. Catalina, what I hear from you is that there is identity in this music and in the rhythms. How does reggaeton speak to racial identity and class identity and geography?
Yes, it's a continuation of its lineage. Reggae was so powerful that, you know, Bob Marley and his band, I'm forgetting the name right now, they were able to unite two opposing political parties in Jamaica. That's powerful. You know, it really speaks to the idea that music is programming. That continuation carried over into Panama, right? With Renato creating the medium of resistance, the song El Deni, right? Which was the private police force in Panama. ¿Qué lo que Deni puede hacer? You know, what can the police can do? What can El Deni do? It was pretty much a song of resistance, and it gave, you know, it highlighted this very negative experience, this very violent experience of Black Panamanians in the country. That continued over to Puerto Rico, you know, where Puerto Ricans were experiencing mano dura contra el crimen, or the iron fist against crime, which, you know, if people are listening and thinking, how does this relate to me? Well, in Puerto Rico, as Dr. Marisol Lebron beautifully says, it mano dura contra el crimen, or the iron fist against crime, pretty much set up the policy for the militarization of police that then carried over into the United States at large. So, I mean, how did this music feed into, you know, these tropes of resistance? This music is extremely political. It was giving people a voice in a way that otherwise they would never have. And it continued a legacy of pride, of dignity, in a way that really wasn't being done otherwise. It's absolutely powerful.
Oh, we're exploring the evolution of reggaeton. It's a journey through the musical genre, its history. With Catalina Gata Eccleston, did you listen to the pioneers of the reggaeton generation, maybe in the 90s? What speaks to you about this genre and how artists have embraced it today? Is it moving away from its roots? Have you ever gone to a reggaeton concert? What was it like? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the massively popular Latin music genre reggaeton on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Its beats can be traced to communities in Panama and Puerto Rico, as we've been talking about. Fast forward to today, how do you feel about reggaeton mixing with the pop charts and that Despacito has been viewed 7.5 billion times on YouTube? What do you think about its Jamaican dancehall roots and the massive pop presence it has today? Where is reggaeton headed? Join in 800-642-1234. Catalina Gata Eccleston founded Reggaeton con la Gata. It's a digital platform covering the history of the genre, and she's with us for the hour. Catalina, I want to talk about Evie Queen and the podcast narrated by this Puerto Rican rapper. Here is one of her most well-known songs, Quiero Bailar, released in 2003. Quiero bailar, tú quieres sudar y pegarte a mí, el cuerpo rosar. Yo te digo si tú me puedes provocar, eso no quiere decir que pa' la cama voy. Quiero bailar, tú quieres sudar y pegarte a mí, el cuerpo rosar. Yo te digo si tú me puedes provocar, eso no quiere decir que pa' la cama voy. So tell us, who is Evie Queen? Why is her voice so important?
Evie Queen, wow. As reggaeton began to explode, or let me back up even then. Before reggaeton was known as reggaeton, in Puerto Rico, it was known as underground. And she was the queen of underground. Mm. She was the only, emphasis on only, female artist to come out of this generation in the late 90s. You know, there was a nightclub called The Noise where people would go and show what they got. She was the only one who could compete with the fellas. And, you know, over time, she was able to, once she became more comfortable, right, because she felt like she had to dress more boyish to kind of fit in and not be harassed. As soon as she felt like she had all the power necessary to make that hit that we just heard, she was dedicated to making sure that while we're dancing to these super like catchy songs, we're also learning about feminist attitudes. Yo quiero bailar is about consent. Yo quiero bailar is about, you know, being able to dance in the club and, you know, going home alone, right? Not having that pressure of being able to comply with some sort of sexual agreement. Oh yeah, she's extremely powerful and in incorporating those type of themes into her music. One of the first from Puerto Rico, if not the first.
You talk about the fellas and how male voices have dominated. Do you see signs of female empowerment in reggaeton?
Yes, there is an increase of women in this space. It's beautiful to see. There's Nati Natasha, Karol G, Farina, Gasu, so many that my mind is kind of exploding. Like, who do I say next? you know, as there's more women entering the space, just more excited to see more power being given to the women as well. That's something that is not only my opinion, but Evie's as well.
Yeah. I want to turn to El General, who pioneered some of the sounds that we hear in reggaeton today. And we're going to go back to his 1991 hit, Muévelo, Move It. Let's hear a bit.
El movimiento, one singular movement, comprised of a variety of parallel aphrodiasporic movements, such as palos in the Dominican Republic, bomba in Puerto Rico, and resistance reggae in Jamaica and Panama, to name a few.
So what do you hear going on there? Can you kind of explain that those influences?
Well, El General's Muévelo, you know, what's beautiful about what El General did and what's beautiful about, you know, this moment in time specifically is that Panamanians and Jamaicans were in the same room, right? Mm. That's what we hear a lot in the second episode, The Nueva York Connection, where La Trevida held parties in her basement called Sessions, right? Mm. This was a collaborative space where Jamaicans and Panamanians, I'm talking Shaggy and General, are in the same room. And it's nothing out of the ordinary because El General has Jamaican roots, right? He has West Indian roots. Understanding Patois is nothing foreign to him. So on that same note of the language, in regards to the sound, Panamanians were right there creating music with Jamaicans, right? So El General, you know, this pounder rhythm created by Sleepy Wonder, he was pretty much the first to incorporate that instrumentation in his music. And that's pretty much the heartbeat of reggaeton. That's why he's considered the father of reggaeton.
Yeah, let's hear a bit more of that clip. Let's see, do we have that clip? Mueve. Ese es un nuevo estilo, quien lo trajo el general. Para todas las chicas que le gusta el menear. Y todos los varones que no se quedan atrás. Agarra a tu pareja y ponte a vacilar. Muévelo, 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 mami, ahora tienes que parar. Catalina, what would you consider to be pure reggaeton in beats and lyrics? You know, how do you decipher it and keep it from not being fused into other genres?
So, see, I feel like that's nearly impossible, right? reggaeton has roots in hip hop, has roots in dancehall, has roots in Puerto Rican bomba y plena, which is inherently African, like Black Puerto Rican. And has roots in reggae as well. So how can we distinguish reggaeton? Well, for one, it has to have all of those elements. It really can't exist without it because it really is a fusion. You take out one, it's more, you take out one of those fusions and it's pretty much not reggaeton. It has to be classified as something else. Dance hall, you know, the pounder rhythm, the dembow that's constantly referenced, that's the heartbeat. Bomba y plena, that's the rhythm. Dance hall, that's pretty much how you're moving your waist, right? That's the that adds the sex appeal. And the hip hop, you know, the manner of which you're rapping, that's the style of which you have to, you know, throw over those lyrics, over those sounds. So, I mean, you take out one, and it's pretty much not reggaeton.
We're talking with Catalina Gata-Eclaston, who's a reggaeton historian, creator of the digital media platform Reggaeton con la Gata. You can join in. What do you think about American hip-hop artists and pop stars collaborating with Spanish-speaking artists? Do you have a dream for a collaboration like this? When did you discover reggaeton, and what speaks to you? 800-642-1234 to join in. So how did reggaeton become attached to like Latin urban music? When did that evolve?
Well, from its inception, I think that, you know, what people, I think that, you know, and I really understand that question because it's kind of like, there's this branding of, you know, Latinidad where it's like Latinos are on one side and, you know, African-Americans are another side, but really, Black Latinos exist, right? And Black Latinos were there during the inception of hip hop, right? DJ Kool Herc is Jamaican. You know, the Caribbeans were there, you know? So in regards to, you know, when this fusion occurred, it was literally from its inception. There isn't any hip hop without Afro-Caribbeans. And so in regards to this evolution and this commercialization more so, you know, I feel like there was this desire to, you know, expand on the sound, to make sure that it reached the ears of everyone and anyone possible. And I feel like, you know, there was this sort of modernization that occurred, and others refer to as a blanqueamiento or a whitening, which I feel is completely valid. And I feel like that contributed to what people call urban today, quote unquote urban. But yeah, that's pretty much the roots, I would say.
What about the influence and the rise of digital platforms and streaming music? You know, what happened to reggaeton with technology?
Yeah, the songs got shorter. I'm feeling that on a personal note because now I'm recording music myself and everyone's like 2 minutes, 30 seconds. This generation likes to play songs over and over and I can't get over that. That's crazy. the songs are getting shorter because of streaming culture, and the songs are becoming more pop because, well, of course I get it, you know, everyone doesn't want songs that are extremely political. This music is inherently political, and of course, you know, Despacito wouldn't have those 7.2 billion streams if it wasn't relatable to, you know, markets that don't necessarily have anything to do with the politics. So What's going on is that it's becoming more pop and the songs are getting shorter, and there's this more desire to be able to transcend markets, which I think is nice in some senses.
We are exploring the story of reggaeton music, its origins, its evolution, how it is treated, referred to today. Catalina Gata Eklestun is a reggaeton historian, associate producer of Spotify's Loud podcast that chronicles the story of this genre. Are you a fan of reggaeton superstar Bad Bunny? What about Sesh? What hooked you on the beat that's said to have originated in Puerto Rico? Be part of this music hour, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network.
Aye.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Camp Desposito, it smashed its way onto American pop charts in 2017, but it wasn't the original version by Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee. It was Desposito featuring Justin Bieber.
Come and move that in my direction. So thankful for that. It's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, you are my sunrise on the darkest day.
We're exploring the context of reggaeton and the narrative of how it fits with other genres today. What are your favorite reggaeton songs or artists? Do you prefer the original version of Despacito? It's 800-642-1234. Catalina Gata Eklestun is a music historian and associate producer for Spotify's Loud podcast with us for the hour. Catalina, what is it with Despacito? How do people connect with it? Viewed 7.5 billion times at last check on YouTube.
It's heartwarming. And I don't know if, you know, tuning in, I can't imagine that you haven't seen the video, right? that was set in La Perla, Puerto Rico, which is quite frankly the most beautiful projects you'll ever see in your life. there is literally just so much love in the words, in the instrumentation. It's lighthearted. It's hard not to love the song.
What can we take away from it? What can we learn from it?
That really, if you just focus on those sort of emotions and emitting those sort of emotions, that's something that everybody can relate to and everybody will buy that. That is what I feel is demonstrated by the success of that song.
Yeah. Can people see identity in that song in terms of the working class identity?
To be honest, I feel like that's a very difficult question just because Despacito leans more on the pop aspect of reggaeton, which is absolutely fine, right? Everybody has their taste. And I feel like that's also the beauty of reggaeton, that there's reggaeton for everybody. Those who like extremely sexual music, like myself, or reggaeton that's a little bit more political or romantic or lighthearted, like Despacito is. So I feel like in regards to a reflection of the working class, I feel like visually, it does, you know, pay homage, but instrumentally, you know, it's a bit far removed. And that's okay. But I just want to be honest of what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Last year, Bad Bunny's album became the first all-Spanish album to ever reach number one on the Billboard 200 chart. And let's take a listen to the song Te Mudaste, and it's from its most recent album.
Pasa el tiempo y no te veo. Dime dónde estás, dime dónde estás. Que extraño el bellaco, las noches de perreo. Dime dónde estás, dime dónde estás. Que ando mirando la foto.
Into that history of Bad Bunny and what he's brought to reggaeton.
Wow, Bad Bunny. I am a huge Bad Bunny fan. I remember listening to his music on SoundCloud, which is actually where he was discovered, right? The legacy continues. That's how a lot of artists are discovered. DJ Luan was able to find his music there. And I mean, wow, from his inception, even the music he had on SoundCloud, you know, he brought like just a different taste, a different sabor to the table. You know, at the time of his inception, that's when Latin trap music in Spanish or Latin trap was booming. And, you know, he took advantage of the sound and really added his flavor to it and made it his own. You know, collaborating with artists, you know, the OGs, you always have to pay respect to the OGs, the ones who came before you. Mm. Arcángel, he made music with him. And, you know, it was just undeniable that he was just different. Who is this dorky kid with these weird glasses and this weird fashion sense making this really good music? You know, people were ready for something different. And that's what Bad Bunny does, you know, along with like this toying of like sexuality that he's able to, you know, demonstrate in his videos and, you know, really like tease these ideas of, you know, what it means to be a man or what it means to accept, you know, queer people, which I think he does so beautifully in making space for them. That's who Bad Bunny is. Every time I hear his name, anything that he's involved in, I'm just so curious as to what boundary he's going to push next. That's who he is.
What I hear from you as well is that reggaeton is not a genre that you can make in isolation, that you can't just hole up in a room and make music, that you really have to feel a part of the constructs around you as a musician and the society yet that you live in, and of course the history and the past of the music. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. That's why it's funny. I've been saying a lot lately, I miss mixtapes. I miss mixtapes. Mixtapes were fun, you know, yes, because you see all of these different artists and bringing all of their different flows onto one track. It used to be like 10 artists on one song. I miss long songs, right? I miss mixtapes. But also because, you know, it gave the ability for people to see old school and new school all in one place, you know, and it was done deliberately. Now I feel like it's more of a choice, which is fine, you know, but I always want to see people given their flowers, right? Something I say often, I need to see people given their flowers. And I feel like, yeah, as you said, like, it's not something you can make in your room all hold up. You really have to pay homage and give respect to the streets first, because that's how it was born. I feel like Bad Bunny did that with his song Tu No Vives Así, and his earlier sounds were a bit more calle, a bit more street. And as time went on, you know, he was able to branch out and do things that were a little bit more experimental, but he would not have gotten there if he first did not give respect to the streets. The streets are the ones who are going to give you that buzz, and then everything that on after, of course, that's on you. Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about the streets as well, what about the streets of New York? Because we really haven't touched on the influences that we've seen about this genre coming from New York.
Yes. You know, La Atrevida held the sessions in her basement that was in Brooklyn, right? And then Kool Herc, you know, being part of that inception of hip hop. But also Puerto Ricans were right there as well. Puerto Ricans have a huge hand in the evolution of hip-hop and bringing that sound to Puerto Rico, right? As we hear in the Nueva York Connection in episode 2 of Loud, Boricuas, there was this like flight that went directly from New York to Puerto Rico that was very, you know, infamous for, you know, that a lot of kids, you know, who were sent to New York or vice versa during the summer by their parents, they would bring culture with them, whether it's from Puerto Rico to New York or vice versa. So yeah, absolutely. There are extreme, you know, Latino roots in whether it's coming from Brooklyn or even Queens and in Bronx, and it's hand on, you know, what that means for New York as a whole, but really Latinidad as a whole in Latin America. Absolutely.
Talking with Carolina Gata-Eclaston, reggaeton historian, creator of the digital media platform Reggaeton con la Gata. You can join in. Have you ever gone to a reggaeton concert? Did you buy merchandise? How do you see the genre in today's fuller musical history? Has it been a positive influence? Join in at 800-642-1234. There are other artists like Sesh from Panama who are trying to stay true to the roots of reggaeton. And let's hear Sal E. Parea from his most recent album, 42. So Perea, type of dance, dembo lyrics reference the beat in reggaeton songs. Can you kind of explain Sesh and what is going on here?
Wow, Sesh is a dream come true. He is, and I hate calling him a unicorn, but really he is a unicorn because, I mean, the way that, you know, this industry moves a bit, right? I would be lying if I said that there isn't a sort of archetype of what a reggaeton artist looks like and sounds like, et cetera, and where they come from, right? There's a lot of nationalist attitudes and, you know, attitudes in regards to, you know, this sort of idea of beauty that we've been holding on to for a while. And Sesh breaks all of that, right? Not to say that he is not beautiful, because that man is absolutely beautiful. But coming from Panama, which you don't see anymore mainstream, right? It went from El General to pretty much nobody, right? He's a continuation of the Panamanian legacy in a way that we've been waiting for forever, which is why I was calling him a unicorn. Sorry, Sesh, but you are. And right, he's a bit fluffy, right? He's a bit bigger than most. And, you know, he loves himself and all of his self. And he has an undeniable talent, And I love that he's getting the love that he's receiving, because I mean, it really speaks to, you know, what is going on here? Is this about talent or is this about something else? Mm. Is this about, you know, the music being amazing, or is this about what we can create as an archetype of, you know, a reggaeton in this space? Sesh, by all means, breaks all barriers at all times. And I'm so happy that he exists and that he's successful in this space, especially during this point in time.
Number 42, it's a tribute to Jackie Robinson, the first African-American baseball player to play in Major League Baseball.
I believe it was to Mariano Rivera, no?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, who is Panamanian and was part in the Yankees. Because I feel like Sesh was trying to illustrate, you know, that bridge of like that one Panamanian being great.
The one Panamanian, right?
Right. There's a parallelism there that I feel like he just wanted to illustrate. And why not? Everybody knows who Mariano Rivera is. And I know that, you know, he also is very fond of Jackie Robinson as well, just being, of course, that first Black person, right? There's a parallelism there as well. Yes, absolutely.
He has a connection to baseball.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Reggaeton historian Catalina Gata-Eclaston taking us through the layers of this genre and its influences today. We're going to hear more Despacito, the original version, though. What direction is reggaeton moving in? Are you open to the fusions? How has reggaeton changed the music industry? Still time for you. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Instrumental. Fundamentals from Shape of You by Ed Sheeran, not the artist who comes to mind in the reggaeton genre. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Latin remix of the song is the inspiration of the Puerto Rican reggaeton duo Zion and Lennox. We're exploring the past, present, and future of reggaeton and how artists have scored hit after hit using its beats. Catalina Gata Eccleston is a music historian and associate producer for Spotify's Loud podcast and stays with us. Catalina, you're a fan of some of the more recent hits, but you're also a fan of the classics from Plan B, Guataba, and let's listen to a snippet of it. So what memories does this song bring up for you? Some emotions.
Wow. I mean, first of all, my nickname is Gata because of this song, ironically. Plan B, they're my favorite artists, ironically. You picked the right song and the right artist. on a personal note, Guata Uva was a song, but it was also a movement within the movement of the reggaeton sex movement, right? Mm-hmm. As we hear in Loud, there was sort of like this super political era where like everybody's trying to combat, mano dura contra el crimen, or the iron fist against crime. And after that, reggaeton just takes the turn, left into like this super sexual era where everybody is literally trying to mimic, what I say and what DJ Blas has said is like the movements of sex, right? He wanted to transport people from the dance floor to the bedroom, which, I mean, yes, that's very extreme. But right, this music is for adults, right? This wasn't music for kids anyways. Plan B, who is also known as El Duo del Sex or the Sex Duo, put themselves out there. I believe they deserve more credit. I'm so glad you brought them up because, again, this is music for adults, right? And I feel like they put themselves out there in a way to really illustrate not only sex, but love and that tension between love and sex, as they illustrate actually on one of their albums. So yeah, that's what I feel on Guata Uva. It's very deep for me.
You launched Reggaeton con la Gata several years ago. How did you become a reggaeton historian?
The public gave me this title, quite literally. I would never wake up one day. I feel like that's so audacious. Like, I'm a historian from today going forward. No, I'm very honored in that people were kind of looking for this bridge between academia and the industry and, the public, the general public. And that's what Reggaeton con la Gata is. I studied reggaeton while I was, studying communications at Marymount Manhattan College, right? And I was able to, center my capstone on implicit bias in the Latin music industry. And that's where I discovered academic papers centered on reggaeton, Marisol Lebrón's work, Dr. Rivera Redu's work, Raquel Cepeda, and et cetera. Everybody who came before me, Wayne Marshall. And, it was the first time that I was able to see, oh my God, people are talking about reggaeton in a manner that is intelligent. I love this. Now I want to be a bridge between academia and literally anybody else, because I don't believe in gatekeeping information. And I feel like the more we understand our history, the better people we can become, the more we can evolve. So that's what my platform is, the bridge.
What did you uncover about implicit bias in Latin music?
Through that work, I was gracious enough to be able to interview Tego Calderon, two Black artists who are one on the rise and one who is established in mainstream, two white artists, one established and one on the rise. And what I was able to discover is that the type of gatekeeping that occurs in the Latin music industry is deliberate in regards to race. And this branding of Latinidad is synonymous with, you know, the product that is desired to sell in the industry, and the manner of which that either hurts or helps, but largely hurts Black artists in the space, whether they are mainstream or not.
Hmm. Is reggaeton becoming a commodity? How do you see that in terms of the genre and it, you know, being a type of commodity?
I feel like, you know, thank goodness there are different types of reggaeton. I go as far as calling modern, extremely modern reggaeton as popeton, like pop reggaeton. It's a joke amongst myself and my followers, really, because it's just so different and so, you know, apolitical from where it really stemmed from. That I think it's unfair to say that it has roots in perreo, which is really, you know, the movement, that sexual movement, that sexual essence of the genre. That's been wiped out so harshly that I feel like it's unfair to really associate that with what perreo and actual older reggaeton actually is. So I feel like is it becoming a commodity? Popeton certainly is, but reggaeton is not. I feel like there are still avenues to explore. I feel like it's still being reinvented in ways that is exciting. And I feel like that legacy will continue, because at the end of the day, those who are from the streets, those who come from the barrios where this music was born in, they demand a certain sound. And as long as there's that demand, that music will continue to meet them halfway. Absolutely.
Going back to the mixtape reference, which I absolutely love, which rising artists in the genre are you following? Or if you could make that master mixtape of the future, who might be on it?
Yes, from the mainstream era, I would include Sech. I would include Sech, Choke It Down from Colombia. I would include Jay Cortez of Puerto Rico, Jay Quiles, because he's an amazing songwriter. I can only imagine what he would do in regards to collaborating with artists on the rise. Like, I would say Nino Augustine, who's Panamanian. I would say Bolsa, who's also Panamanian. Faith, who is Puerto Rican, I believe. And I know I'm not saying a lot of women, but really there really aren't a lot of ladies on the rise. There's a lot of ladies who are mainstream right now. So in which case I would include Evie Queen to have that feminist touch. And I'd include Andrexa, who is from Venezuela, who has a lot of exciting alternative sounds and is innovating in ways that I didn't see coming. And lastly, I would include Latra Vida, but sadly she doesn't make music anymore. There's a lack of dark-skinned Black women in this space. That's what I hope to see in the future. And I would go scouting to the ends of the earth to see who exists to add them to that mixtape, is what I'd say.
Catalina, this has been so wonderful. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And it'd be such a dishonor if I don't mention the team. Shout out to Futuro Studios, Marlon Bishop, Luis Gallo, Sandra Rhino, Jean Montalvo, and the Spotify team, Julio A. Pavon, Jessica Molina, Akimu. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Catalina Gata Eclistan is a reggaeton historian, creator of the digital media platform Reggaeton con la Gata, of course, part of the Loud podcast from Spotify. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.